To glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordia. You can find my work online at mikeluoma.com. That's M-I-K-E-L-U-O-M-A. And at glowinthedarkradio.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter. Say hi. Facebook.com/Mike Luoma and twitter.com/Mike Luoma, M-I-K-E-L-U-O-M-A. We also have a Facebook page for Glow in the Dark Radio, facebook.com/Glow in the Dark Radio. You can sign up at any of my sites, including the Facebook page, for the Glow in the Dark Radio email list. I send it out about once a month, sometimes a little more often. I've sent out a couple more recently just because I've had a lot going on with Episode 450, and the brand new comic book. More about those coming up in the news. If you sign up for the mailing list, you get a free book. It's an ebook, a PDF. It's an anthology of stuff, of mine, including the short story Alibi Jones and the Ghost in the Machine that you can't find anywhere else right now. It's also got a preview of Alibi Jones' Vacation, the comic book story that's in The Adventures of Alibi Jones, issue number 2. There are also previews of Vatican Assassin, the graphic novel, and Good Samaritan number 2. You can see some of the fresh pencils from Federico Guillen, and some of Federico's other work. Plus, there are excerpts from the Vatican Assassin Index as well. And again, this is an anthology I've put together. It's called The Glow in the Dark Radio Guide to Life, and it's only available to people who sign up for the mailing list. Plus, you get those cool emails from me, you know? Again, you can sign up at any of my sites, MikeLuoma.com, GlowInTheDarkRadio.com, or Facebook.com/GlowInTheDarkRadio. It's even on the blog on the sidebar. We've got Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her, Chapter 7, on the way today. On this episode, Alibi is home on the colony world Cat's Eye, trying to figure out his next move. Finder will find the Sunrise of Her for him, if he finds a relic of the ancient enemy for Finder. Finder says he's sure Alibi Jones will be able to track down the traveled chair of Inokata. But Alibi's not really sure where to begin. He'll try to figure that out in Chapter 7 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her, coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio. Before we get there, however, I've got a special treat for you. And me. Andrew P. Weston is a great fantasy and science fiction writer. You might know him for his Legion Out of Time novels, The Ninth, and Exordium of Tears. He also writes for Janet Morris's Heroes in Hell series, and that's why he's on the show today. He's got a new full-length novel coming out featuring Damon Grimm, Satan's Grim Reaper, the character he's been writing about for the Heroes in Hell series. More about that, and our visit from Andy, in just a couple of minutes. First, a little bit of news. I've got a new book alert. Vatican Assassin, the graphic novel, issue 1 of 4, is now out at Comixology and Drive-Thru Comics. Now in full color, thanks to Juan Carlos Quatordia. The man is an artist, he's a colorist, and a musician. You hear his music opening and closing this show. The original art's by Christian Navarro. Just released this past Wednesday, so you can get yours now. It's pretty cool with the guided view on Comixology, too. More details at MikeLuoma.com or GlowInTheDarkRadio.com. And a reminder to just go back one episode for the big 450, episode 450. Great cameo shoutouts, Vatican Assassin and Alibi Jones. It's a party. Well, not so much a party as a quality audio experience. Our big episode 450. That's all for news. Now let me tell you a little bit about our guest, author Andrew P. Weston. As I mentioned earlier, he has written The Ninth and Exordium of Tears, great fantasy novels featuring Rome's Lost Legion. And he's been tapped by Janet Morris to author the exploits of Satan's Grim Reaper, Damon Grimm, for her Heroes in Hell series. He's about to release Hellhounds, a novel-length adventure featuring Damon Grimm. The book comes out October 25th. Andy has been writing Damon Grimm since he first appeared in a short story in Doctors in Hell. The story Grimm, Satan's chief bounty hunter, next appeared in his first full-length adventure, Hellbound. Someone was trying to get their hands on items that were banned since they were used in the original Rebellion Against Heaven. Probably want to use them to try to escape from hell. It's not going to happen if Damon Grimm has anything to say about it. Grimm finds himself pitted against some great minds out of history, and a conspiracy against Satan's rule of hell. Grimm's most recent adventure was in the short story Pieces of Hate in the anthology Pirates in Hell, where Grimm turns to some brutal buccaneers for help with Skull Isle. Skull Isle. What could go wrong? Which brings us to the brand new novel, the full-length adventure, Hellhounds, out at the end of this month. The rebellion that Grimm ran into in Hellbound ran deeper than Grimm knew. More of Hell's residents are working against Satan. New foes emerge looking to test themselves against Grimm. And the insane angel Grislington is in disguise, wreaking its own random wreckage. But so far, only one damned soul has what it takes to be a hellhound and work alongside Damon Grimm. And to find out more, you'll have to read the book. Out October 25th. One very cool quote in the material that Andy sent me about Grimm is this quote: "There are aspects of Grimm's hidden past that slowly unfurl as each story is told. He is an enigma, both frightening and awesome to behold. And as his power increases, he evolves into an increasing threat to all concerned." End quote. I like that. The new book is Hellhounds, on the way from Andrew P. Weston, who is with us for a guest reading on Glow in the Dark Radio. Welcome, Andy.
Hi there, my name's Andrew Weston, Andy to my friends, and on behalf of my friend Mike, I'd like to welcome you to a special spot on Glow in the Dark Radio, which I'm about to spoil with a spot of reading in celebration of the imminent release of Hellhounds. It's the latest novel-length adventure of Satan's Reaper of Souls, and to put you in the mood, for those of you interested in that kind of fantasy fiction, I thought I'd read the prologue from Grimm's very first novel-length adventure, Hellbound. So I apologise in advance because I don't normally read out loud, so there's bound to be one or two mistakes. I'd say sorry about that in advance, but hopefully it won't detract from whatever enjoyment you get from it too much. So here we go. This is the prologue of Hellbound, to give you an idea of what Satan's Reaper, Damon Grimm, is all about. Lost in shadow, I surveyed my surroundings and took my time to ensure the area was deserted. The squall outside fell in stinging gusts, creating a tympanic frenzy of contending melodies. I paused for a moment to save the erratic beat of rain against metal, glass and corrugated roofing. Only with the greatest effort could I break free from its hypnotic discord to concentrate on the task at hand. That didn't take long, for I'd chosen my location well. It was past midnight and my position at the top of the stairwell afforded me a commanding view of the parking lot outside. Apart from a sole discarded coffee cup tumbling its way along a line of stationary vehicles like a demented gymnast, I was completely alone and invisible to the detritus of humanity sleeping fitfully beneath makeshift shelters. The scant security lighting that still worked at this level of the garage did little to illuminate the area. If anything, each lamp created a swathe of gloom that I would use to my advantage, for my assignment here would end shortly. It was almost time to go home. Just the thought of getting back sent a twinge of pleasure tingling along my spine. While my work afforded me a degree of freedom enjoyed by no one else, I always felt fatigued the longer I stayed away, and a week was simply too long. Still, It's been a good harvest. Not only was I able to sort out a major problem for the boss, but the latest candidate should go a long way toward calming his frustrations. A faint echo pretending ravenous hunger intruded at the edge of my astral perceptions. Adjusting my awareness, I sensed my quarry coming closer. Forewarned, I used the opportunity to mentally review his rap sheet. Let me see. Jesus Toledo Perez, born in 1980 in New Mexico to Alberto Toledo and Christiana Perez, a fraternal twin introduced to his true vocation at the tender age of just 5 years when he smothered his sibling, Alana, in a sleep following an infantile spat. Authorities weren't able to pin anything on him at the time. And how would they? An innocent child rolling over in the night to cuddle his sister as they slept. Little did the Toledo family appreciate the monster born into their midst that day. But we did, and that act had drawn him to our attention. For as little Jesus grew up, his crimes progressed from random acts of asphyxiation as a child to the more opportunistic, premeditated, hormone-driven angst of a teenager. By the time he graduated, Jesus had strangled, drowned, and pushed 7 other people to their deaths. Judging from what it says here, he always acted as if he was daring the authorities to catch him. Just what we want. A cold, calculating killer with a God complex. I watched him from my place of concealment as he edged his way out onto the top tier from the opposite side of the level. Hiding beneath an oversized golf umbrella and dressed to the nines in an expensive suit and raincoat, he looked every bit the high flyer currently establishing himself as a philanthropist and charity worker among the city's homeless. The perfect cover, or so he thinks. I noticed he was carrying a plastic bag. Despite the wind, I could hear the contents clunking as he moved. Going with the poison hooch option tonight, are we? I suppressed a snort at the poignancy of the situation. I got a real-life Jesus of suburbia right in front of me, but the only salvation he'll be bringing one of the poor and lowly tonight is a release from the suffering of their miserable lives. Time to intercede, I think. Like a wraith, I detached myself from the gloom and stepped out into the night. Within moments, the rain had soaked my hair and beaded my trench coat and sunglasses in a chainmail of translucent pearls. Gliding silently between parked vehicles, the only sign of my advance came from the momentary dimming of the overhead lights as I passed. I neared my target and noticed Jesus had stooped low over a congregation of cardboard boxes between 2 large trucks. The soft chink of glass scraping on concrete signaled his preparations, and in moments several bottles stood on the floor before him. "There you go," he crooned. "This'll help you keep warm on a night like this." Several pairs of grubby hands snaked out from the darkened alcoves. Grasping at the unexpected gifts, they fought among themselves, frantic for any solace that might ease the drudgery of their existence, if only for a little while. A cap popped and necks craned as bottles were lifted toward eager lips. "Oh, no, you don't." I swept forward and slapped one of the bottles away from desperate fingers. Full, it bounced once before exploding in a shower of liquid crystal splinters. Jesus spun to face whoever had intervened in his machinations, and his look of anger blanched into one of fear as his gaze met mine. I couldn't blame him. Despite the glasses, I'd always had that effect on people. Dressed from head to toe in black and coming in at over 6 feet tall, I exuded an air of menace and barely suppressed aggression. Without taking my eyes from him, I grabbed Jesus by the collar, lifted him off the floor and addressed the bums now cowering inside their rain-sodden caves. "Ladies and gentlemen, if you value your existence, I strongly suggest you stay where you are for the next few minutes. Enjoy your beverages and the fact that each of you will now live to see the dawning of a brand new day." As I concluded my sentence, I flexed and sent Jesus sailing through the downpour behind me. Only then did I pause to regard the occupants within their shelters. Nervous, wide-eyed, owl-like expressions stared back. Holding their attention, I nodded once to reinforce my point, then turned on my heels and stalked toward my mark. Jesus hit the deck with a tooth-jarring thud and the air whooshed from his lungs. He rolled onto his side, groaning and coughing up blood. Shaking the moisture from his sodden brow, he attempted to push himself up on his hands and knees. I slowed my advance and unfastened the buttons of my coat. With infinite care, I pulled my left-hand glove off by its fingertips. A gust of wind brought that coffee cup careening our way. Tap, tap, splat, tippity-tap, splat. Mesmerised, we both stopped to watch as it scudded past and commenced dancing around us in circles. Jesus used the interlude to stagger to his feet. Swaying, he forced down a ragged breath and then threw me a dirty look. Idiot, you're just making your last moments on earth all the more unpleasant. I surged forward, bore my right fist and punched him in the face. His nose shattered with a satisfying crunch. Spinning head over heels, Jesus spiraled away from me, smashed through the doorway and landed in a heap at the top of the stairwell. I was on him in seconds, but allowed him the courtesy of regaining his wits a little before I continued. He struggled to regain his focus. Blinking furiously, he clutched his face and peered up through tear-laden eyes. Although unsteady, I hadn't quite knocked the stuffing out of him. Yet. "Who the fuck are you?" he hissed. "What do you want?" Sweeping the vent of my coat to one side, I exposed my weapon for the briefest fraction of a second and removed an official-looking document sealed in blood-red wax from an inside pocket. He caught sight of the high-tech sickle and froze. I cracked the seal, unfolded the scroll and said, "Jesus Toledo Perez, listen carefully. This is an official illegal declaration. For your crimes against humanity, you have damned yourself and your life is forfeit. I am authorized by His Satanic Majesty to reap your eternal soul. Sentence is to be carried out immediately. Are there any last words you'd like to say?" What? He spluttered. "Are you kidding me? Are you seriously to try to make out you're some kind of, what, Grim Reaper? Why do they always say that?" "No, this isn't a joke." I stepped forward and held out my exposed hand, as if offering to help him stand. "We've been watching you ever since you murdered little Alana all those years ago. Mind you, I've got to be honest, even then you didn't stand condemned. Childhood naivety and all that. However, because of your course of action since then..." I shrugged, my left hand still proffered. "Well, that's a whole new ball game, isn't it?" I smiled like I was his new best friend. That did the trick. Reaching out, Jesus accepted my offer. As we made contact, the letters etched across the parchment glowed white hot. Jesus gasped and his eyes widened in shock. Then the writ itself burst into flames. At that exact moment, he stiffened as if impaled on a spike of unimaginable agony. All the tension drained from his body, and he folded silently into the floor. "Another fool successfully bound for hell," I mumbled. "Speaking of which..." I glanced back out across the parking lot and checked to ensure my activities remained unobserved. Nothing. Satisfied, I leaned over the internal railings and stared down into the darkness of the sub-basement. Excellent. Nice and clean, just the way I like it. The temper of the rain drumming against the roof increased, as if bidding me a fond farewell. Time to go. I removed my other glove to ensure both hands were free, then slid my scythe from its sheath. Depressing the center gem adorning the handle, I listened as a faint whine confirmed a buildup of power. A tingling sensation crawled across my skin. Gripping the staff firmly, I channeled my energy along its length and slammed the butt into the ground. "Darash! Midraxeg Anis," I intoned in ancient Hellenese. "Portal, open to me now." The floor sagged and fell away as if a sinkhole had opened beneath it. Moments later, a swirling vortex created a void between dimensions. Tongues of lightning played along the edges of a boiling corona. Stabbing out, they probed the walls and railings in a sizzling discharge that sent sparks dancing along my clothes and across the surface of my skin. Stiff breeze erupted in response to the sudden vacuum. Redolent with sulphur and charred flesh, it put me immediately at ease. With a final glance at the body of the late, not-so-great Jesus Toledo Perez, I jumped into the jaws of doom. Engulfed within a maelstrom of kaleidoscopic contradictions, I felt as if I were floating on air before the heady rush of an insane descent swept me away. Eternity became encapsulated within an instant, and before I knew it, I'd slammed into an entirely different type of ground. I felt my spirit resonate to a familiar vibe and inhale the sweet fragrance of home. Tappity-tap, tap, plop, eh? I glanced down. The coffee cup obviously liked my company. It had decided to string along on my descent into hell. Well, look at that. Got sucked into the vortex along with me. I determined that perhaps it would be nice to keep this little memento of my latest trip topside and stoop toward it. But the polystyrene had already blackened, bubbled, and begun to melt. Ah, bugger. This place isn't for everyone. Well, there you go. That's the opening scene from Hellbound, Damon Grimm's first ever full-length adventure. The sequel, Hellhounds, is due out at the end of this month through Persid Press. You've been listening to Glow in the Dark Radio, and hopefully I haven't sent too many of you to sleep. Now it's back to the show.
Thank you, Andy. Yes, you did great. Remember, Hellhounds is out October 25th. Up next, The Adventures of Alibi Jones. Now, here's Chapter 7 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her on Glow in the Dark Radio. Once back on the ground at home in his apartment on Cat's Eye, Alibi looks up the travel chair of Inokata on the Solar Alliance Knowledge Net. There's very little there. Finder gave him more to go on. Alibi tries looking up Metcalf and Laughing Array. There are more results for the Metcalfs. Biographies of the exploring family, cautionary tales of their disappearances, and a few stories of madmen reappearing years later. Alibi tries to read the accounts, but the words blur. He realizes that between Wentworth Station and the trip down to Earth, he hasn't slept in about 36 hours.
Can't afford to sleep. Only have a week, and over half of it is gone.
Alibi can't resist sleep as exhaustion overtakes him. He does manage to postpone dropping off long enough to get himself into bed before he finally conks out. His apartment's comm alert goes off and wakes him up after 12 solid hours of sleep.
Shit, forgot to set the alarm. Only have 3 more days. What's that? Oh, the comm. Who is it?
Aunt Anita, Alibi answers the comm. Alibi, how are you? His aunt sounds like she's in a pleasant mood.
I'm good, good, he answers, trying to wake up after the long sleep.
How's the search for the Sunrise of Her going? She asks.
Pretty well. I've found someone who says he can help me find it, Alibi says. Met a guy who's good at finding things.
Really? And what does this guy want in return for doing that? She asks, instantly suspicious.
I've got to find something for him.
What do you need to find for him?
Not something illegal or dangerous, I hope, Anita presses.
It's probably better if you don't know, he tells her.
I don't like the sound of that, Alibi.
It's nothing illegal or anything like that, Aunt Anita, I promise.
Who is this guy? She asks.
It's probably better if you don't...
Alibi! She cuts him off.
Don't say it. Who is he?
Finder.
He calls himself Finder, he relents.
Can't really keep anything from her after all. Besides, that's not really a name.
This is Wentworth's doing, isn't it? Anita no longer sounds like she is in a pleasant mood.
I wish you hadn't gone and gotten him involved.
Krish seemed to think it was a good idea, Alibi offers.
He did at first, she says, but then Krish called me after you had gone. He felt guilty, you see. Confessed he'd put you in touch with Wentworth.
She pauses.
I don't like that old man, Alibi.
I thought you folks were all in the war together back when, Alibi asks, confused.
Well, yes, but...
She stops, thinking back to the war against the Eldred, remembering.
He did help, back then, and he will sometimes. But, well, if he's willing to help...
She tries to explain her misgivings.
I guess it's just, he never does anything unless there's some sort of return in it for him. I don't like that. Really don't trust him when I can't see what his return is, what he's angling for.
Wentworth doesn't want the thing I'm going after. I think there's some other thing he's asked Finder to get for him, Alibi guesses. Finder kind of trades in finding things, and Finder says there was some reason I was the only one who could find the specific thing he wants me to find for him.
So, Wentworth found you for Finder, then, already,
Anita points out.
Now my head is starting to hurt, Alibi says. Wheels within wheels, Alibi. It's always the way it is with people like Wentworth.
And people like you, Aunt Anita.
Right. He's already got you doing things for him, Alibi. Don't you see? That's how it works. He'll get you what you want, what you need, but, and there's always a but with these people, First, you've got to help me do this. She pauses to let the thought sink in. So, are you going to tell me what hoop he's already trained you to jump through?
I hate it when she's right.
I'm looking for something called the Travel Chair of Inokata, he says. It's an artifact. Used to belong to the ancient enemy. If I find it for Finder, he'll give me the sunrise of her. Maybe the SAIF should find Finder and have him give us the sunrise of her, she muses.
Guess this is why Finder doesn't like to be found.
Somehow I don't think he'd be that easy to track down, Alibi says. I have to go through Wentworth to get back in touch with him, once I've found the chair. What's next then, Alibi? His aunt asks. Anything I can help with? I'm going to have some breakfast. I'm starving. Alibi? Anita sounds less than amused over the calm. Sorry, he shrugs. Thank you, Aunt Anita, Alibi says. Think I'm all set. I'll get my cruiser out and... A flash of inspiration hits Alibi. Hey, Aunt Anita, have you ever heard of the planet Metcalf? Metcalf? I've heard that name, but... No, doesn't really ring a bell. Why? That's where legends say the travel chair is supposed to be. It's one of the old Eldred worlds. Got its modern name from the Metcalf family who tried to settle it. They all lost their minds or something. Oh, Anita says. There's silence on the comm. Aunt Anita? I'd forgotten, she says. Until you said the Metcalf family. I'd forgotten about those poor people. Oh, so you do know about them? It's coming back to me. I was the prime rep at the time they went exploring. Then you know where it is? Finder said it could be any one of about 100 old Eldred worlds. Oh, yes, she says. But Alibi, you can't go there. Why not? The reports are all true, Alibi, she says. That poor family. They were all close to brain dead when they were finally found. The SA posted their planet as unsafe and dangerous. When was that? Alibi asks. When did all this happen? I don't remember it. That's because you are about 5 or 6 years old, Anita says. It was 2115, I think. We called them the Metcalf family, but they weren't all related, just most of them. It was a family operation, right after the war, as groups of people began heading out to found and set up new colonies. They were part of that first wave. Alibi hears his aunt laugh a little on the other end of the comm. We were all so hopeful back then. We knew the Eldred worlds were off limits, but there seemed to be so many other worlds out there. Metcalf appeared to be a habitable planet with no higher life forms. I remember it was a surprising find at the time in that part of space. Funny how much comes back as you start to think about it. What else do you remember? Alibi asks her, hoping for more. Everything seemed fine at first, she says. Reports from their world were no different than any other new colonies. If anything, they were better. We received a report that they were going to examine some old alien machinery that appeared to have crashed in the distant past. It was the last we heard from them. Well, the last sane thing we heard from them. Was it the Laughing Array? Alibi asks, remembering what Finder said. What? Anita sounds confused. Laughing? Well, there might have been a reference to something like that. It does sort of ring a bell, but this was no laughing matter, Alibi. When the next supply ship arrived there, the planet had become like something out of a nightmare. The entire population of the colony had gone insane. They had all turned on each other. She sounds distant, as if remembering news reports. After seeing such degradation and cannibalism, the supply ship didn't land. They took off and left the poor, crazy colonists on the planet, reporting back to the nearest safe facility on their grisly findings. So that's the mad planet Metcalf, huh? Alibi tries to joke. But that was a long time ago, right? Could be fine now. There's no reason to believe it's any safer now, Alibi, she says in a solemn tone.
I've got a reason. But damn, promised Wentworth I wouldn't mention planets are detoxifying.
But you know where it is? He keeps trying. God help me, she says. She sighs. I do, Allie. But no one has been back there for 20 years. You have no idea. If it looks bad, I won't land.
Alibi, she says in a stern voice, as if he was still 4 years old. Aunt Anita, he replies, matching her tone. There's silence on the comm.
Come on.
If I can find Metcalf, I can find that travel chair, Alibi says. That chair will get me the Dakur's treasure. They get their Sunrise of Her back, and relations between the Solar Alliance and the Dakur stop being so strained. Maybe I can even get Kit to talk to me again. There's still no answer. Alibi can hear his aunt breathing, but she isn't giving in. I've at least got to try, Aunt Anita. There's too much at stake not to, isn't there? Alibi hears her sigh.
She's going to tell me.
The Metcalfs left from Depot, Anita says, finally breaking the silence. I don't have the coordinates of the world they went to, obviously. After that supply ship returned with their tales of horrors, my cabinet and I decided it would be best to lose the location of the world. You erased it from the charts? Alibi asks. That doesn't work, his aunt says. She laughs. It would have been impossible to hide the location. So we did the opposite. We labeled about 100 other planets, Metcalf, to hide it in plain sight. Clever. And you added to the legends. Did you know that? I suppose so, she admits. Alibi, I wish you wouldn't go there. You put me on this path, Aunt Anita. I'm just going in the direction you told me to go, Alibi pushes back. Come on, tell me, is there still a record of the location of the original Metcalf? She remains silent. Aunt Anita, Alibi says, trying to elicit a response. I can hear you breathing. There are some hard copies, she finally says. Older star charts, hard copies, on Depot. Confidential records held at the SA garrison there. She doesn't say it out loud, but Alibi can hear the, I can't believe I'm doing this, in his aunt's tone of voice. I'll have the charts released to you. Really? Thank you, Aunt Anita. Alibi can't believe it. You need to be very careful, she warns him. Don't land on Metcalf unless you are absolutely sure it's safe. I won't, he reassures her. I'll call you back with instructions for retrieving the charts after I have arranged for their release with the garrison on Depot. Be very careful, Alibi. Anita out. She signs off. Alibi doesn't waste any time packing. His aunt can reach him on board the cruiser as easily as at home. He leaves his apartment and makes his way down to the safe landing bays and ship's berths at the Cat's Eye main port.
That was Chapter 7 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her on Glow in the Dark Radio. Alibi Jones may be a bit closer to finding the mad planet Metcalf and the ancient enemy's traveled chair of Inokata for Finder. Thank you, Aunt Anita. We'll see if Alibi Jones is on the right track in Chapter 8 of Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her on our next episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. Quick news recap, just a reminder that my new book came out this past Wednesday. Vatican Assassin, the graphic novel, issue 1 of 4, now in full color, by myself, Christian Navarro, and Juan Carlos Quatordio. It's at Comixology and Drive-Thru Comics, and you can find out more at glowinthedarkradio.com and mikeluoma.com. Thank you again to our special guest, Andrew P. Weston. Look for his new novel, Hellhounds, at the end of the month on October 25th. Thank you again, Andy. And that is all for this episode of Glow in the Dark Radio. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.